So last night I talked about the overall practice that we're doing here in terms of metaphor, the metaphor of the two wings to awakening, being wisdom and compassion. But there wasn't time at that point to explore the actual practice of compassion. So this afternoon I'd like to give a little bit more context for it, and then we'll do some actual practice. And I'm going to focus this around some of the more challenging emotions that can come up on retreat and, of course, in daily life. Now, all of us are at different phases in our practice on this retreat, so it's possible that some of you might be thinking, oh, I'm not having any difficult emotions, everything is fine. In fact, on the last retreat, one person said, oh, I just stopped listening then because I wasn't having any difficult emotions. And guess what happened? The very next day they wrote me a note, what did you say again? So even if it doesn't feel relevant right now, just perhaps file it away for possible future reference. So as I mentioned last night, karuna, or compassion, is the capacity to turn towards suffering with metta, with kindness, and, where possible, to help it release. So the relationship between metta and karuna is that metta is the foundation, base of goodwill, and then from that base of goodwill we turn it towards what's difficult in our own and others' lives.
Can I just ask, there were people who were having to leave today, have they already gone?
I was going to mention that at the end. So if you're aware of their absence and it's causing a little flicker, that's a beautiful place to bring metta and compassion. And just so you know, I had lunch with them, so they didn't just vanish into thin air. We had a chance to talk together. Thank you for your care. Okay, so karuna, or compassion, is what happens when metta turns towards what's difficult. And it's the metta that gives us the capacity to meet the difficulties without shutting down, without being overwhelmed by grief. And these movements of resistance, of shutting down, and of grief, different forms of clinging, you could say, very commonly come up in relation to compassion. And in fact, the Buddha's teachings recognize that when we start to try to develop these skillful states, what we often encounter are quite a few obstacles. You could almost say that these practices are designed to show us what gets in the way. So for this reason, they are sometimes referred to as purification practices, because they reveal that conditioning that blocks us, our unconscious or conscious defense strategies that keep us shut down, disconnected or numb, or perhaps angry, resentful, self-pitying, or stuck in anxiety, depression, despair. So in the classical teachings, each of these Brahmavihara has what are known as a near enemy and a far enemy. And these are the common afflictive states that tend to come up when we start trying to aim for the beautiful qualities. For myself, I found it reassuring, actually, that these so-called enemies were known and recognized all the way back in the early teachings. So I wasn't the only one who would sit down with some hope of cultivating kindness and find myself at times totally numb or bored out of my brain, or seething with petty resentment, or just nauseated by the goodness of it all. And perhaps some of you recognize those patterns. So the far enemy is the direct opposite of the quality that we're trying to develop. And in relation to compassion, the far enemy is cruelty. So instead of the motivation to relieve suffering, it's the opposite. It's the sadistic wish to add to someone's pain, which, because of the law of karma, will only end up hurting us too. And then the near enemies of compassion are pity and grief. falling into overwhelm or despair. And these are called the near enemies because at first glance they might seem like they're the quality we're looking for, but it's just a bit off in some way. So for example, pity from the outside might seem like it's in the terrain of compassion, but if we look more closely, we might notice that energetically there's a kind of distancing or separating or even superiority to it, sort of looking down on poor you over there who's suffering so badly. So if we do recognize this kind of disconnection, we might need to re-establish the foundation of warmth, of kindness, of metta, get that coming more strongly, and then again turn towards compassion. Or it might be better to change the person we're working with to someone who's less likely to evoke pity rather than true compassion. And this changing of the person we're working with is not cheating. So with all of these Brahmavihara practices, we're encouraged to start where the quality comes most easily and then gradually expand our capacity to offer compassion to a wider and wider range of beings. So a second challenge with compassion is that because it's inviting us to come into direct contact with pain and suffering, it can be easy to fall into sorrow or grief. But this is not true compassion. And as I briefly mentioned last night, there's sometimes a misunderstanding that compassion is simply empathy, just feeling with another's pain as if it was our own. But this, as you probably know, can easily lead to compassion fatigue or empathy burnout. And in the context of the Buddha's teachings, what prevents this burnout is the orientation to the wish for the pain to be relieved. So if we do find ourselves getting lost in suffering, we might need to emphasize the release or the relief aspect of it. Even if it's just an imaginative exercise, we might visualize the person or ourselves experiencing some moments of relief from the pain. So perhaps, for example, we imagine the person coming back to full health or getting out of debt or finding a better job, being involved in a healthy relationship, or whatever the situation is. And again, there's wisdom here. So there are times when the suffering is not going to just nicely, tidily go away. So perhaps a person has a terminal diagnosis, and we know that they're not going to recover full health. So we don't just kind of wish something that's unrealistic, but we might imagine them having moments of relief from whatever pain they're in. We might visualize them having moments of loving connection with their family members or partners and so on. So just to emphasize, this is a creative practice and it's adaptable to the circumstances that we're actually in. So as I touched into last night, one of the challenges with compassion, and particularly self-compassion, is it can bring us into direct contact with some very deep conditioning, painful self-views, afflictive emotions, all kinds of difficult mind states. So I wanted to offer just a few suggestions now for working with any challenging emotions that might come up at times. And the first point is to work with them very gently and gradually. Because I've noticed a tendency, both in myself and a lot of students, in relation to strongly afflictive emotions, people tend to flip between two extremes. One is just to reflexively avoid, ignore, deny, repress, don't go anywhere near it. And the other is to push ourselves to drill down into our deepest, most excruciating trauma and stay there, because anything less than that is somehow cheating. But both of those are just symptoms of the same pattern of wounding that we're trying to heal. So instead, when working with difficult emotions, we're trying to stay in balance in relation to them. So the Buddha's emphasis on the middle way, the balance between not avoiding, ignoring, repressing, but also not feeding, indulging, or getting overwhelmed in it. And how do we find that balance? Again, it's by listening to ourselves, noticing, being aware of our capacity in any situation to manage these challenges. And then only when the timing feels right, perhaps taking a session of meditation to investigate a little more closely what is happening in the body, the heart, the mind. And so if what we're dealing with is in the terrain of trauma particularly, is very intense, then we want to touch into it in very small doses, just enough to strengthen our emotional immune system, but not so much that it overwhelms it. So how do we work with these, specifically in meditation? If we do touch into a painful emotion, usually the first response in the body is to contract, to tighten, to tense up, to resist or brace against it, which mostly makes the experience even more unpleasant. So I often share a mantra that I borrowed from the Zen teacher Charlotte Joko Beck, and that mantra is ABC, which stands for A, bigger container. And it has to be very simple, because when we're in the middle of a difficult emotion, we have to have something very easy to recall. So ABC is the invitation to make space, you could say, to make a bigger container for whatever that difficult energy is. And we can do that at first literally, physically, just by sitting up a little straighter, broadening the shoulders, breathing a little more deeply, physically making space in the body for that contraction to be there. So as we've been doing, just noticing those places in the body where we do tend to tighten up and consciously softening them. If that doesn't seem to have an effect and we're still tight and tense, caught up, then it can be helpful to open the eyes and borrow the space of the room. So just visually let ourselves have more space. So the container moves from being just our own bodies to being the space of the room. Sometimes even that doesn't feel enough. So if there's a lot of intensity to this challenge, we might need to borrow the space of space itself. So open up to the sky. If we're outside, we might literally look at the sky. Or in here, look out the window. Just see the vastness. This expanse of the bush, the forest, and take that in. So these are all ways of making a bigger container. And the analogy is like the wild horse. You know, if we put a wild horse in a small corral, it goes crazy, kicks and bucks, and potentially does a lot of damage. But if we let that horse out into a bigger field or paddock, the energy is the same, but the impact is different. So A, B, C, make a bigger container. And if we are still getting lost in the emotion, then a second strategy is what's known as touch and go. So we might deliberately just touch in to whatever the emotion is. Note it, know it, acknowledge it. And then very consciously take our attention somewhere else, to something that is not painful or unpleasant. So here's where you can skillfully use Vedana, or feeling tone. So you might know that feeling of, stabbing in the heart, or welling of tears. You know it, you feel it. And then what else is happening right now? Is there anything pleasant in my experience that I can orient to? So again, I might just look out of the window and see the sunlight shining on the ponga leaves. Or I might feel the softness of the shore. Or just that sense of ease as I breathe out more deeply. So learning the skill of moving our attention rather than having it be pulled down into something that's afflictive is crucial. And sometimes if we can't find anything in the moment that feels pleasant, we might consciously bring to mind a memory of a time from the past when we were fully open, at ease, relaxed, and so on. So again, this can be a creative practice. The main thing is that we're trying to consciously do what we do, and that we're what's known in the medical profession as titrating the dose of our exposure to what's painful. So just like with medication, we want to find just the right amount that strengthens our immune system, but not so much that we have an allergic reaction. So a second way of putting limits around this is to do it for a set period of time. We might literally set a timer for 30 seconds and say, okay, can I just be with this, whatever it is, for 30 seconds? And then when the bell rings, you might literally or metaphorically bow and then go and do something completely different, preferably something that is nourishing, restorative, soothing. So there was a time when I was at the forest refuge and I was working with shame for 6 weeks, and there were, especially in the beginning, it was pretty intense, and I would be like, oh, I am not going there, no way, no. How about 5 seconds? Okay. Set the timer for 5 seconds. Oh, blah, oh, horrible, oh, I don't like it, blah. Yep, 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 this is it, this is shame, okay, bing, phew, thank you. And then the next time it will be 7 seconds, and then 15 seconds, and then at some point I didn't need a timer, it just was able to come and go. So I'm trying to reinforce in this that it's not cheating to move away from difficulty. It's actually skillful means if we're doing it with awareness in the service of balance. And then finally, self-compassion, as I said last night, is kind of a universal antidote for all forms of pain and suffering. And yet, as I said, many people struggle with this. So we want to take care, not force it. And if all we can do at times is just put a hand on the heart to steady the quivering or to acknowledge the distress, that's fine. That's a good start. And then lastly, as our capacity to be with difficult emotions increases, we might even at times feel a kind of appreciation, because suffering is what helps us strengthen these capacities to be with difficulties. They can't be developed any other way. So when we have managed to release an afflictive state and we realize we're not getting caught in that story or that pattern or emotion in the same way, really let that in. Acknowledge it. Celebrate it as a benefit of this practice. Because the more we release these afflictive emotions, the more space there is for the skillful ones to emerge. And yet again, because of that negativity bias, most of us put far more attention on what's wrong with our practice and what we haven't done and what we should be doing than letting in those times when there is an absence of the hindrances. So letting in when there is ease and happiness and peace and so on, even if it's just for a few seconds at a time. Okay, so we're going to be practicing in a moment with a short guided compassion meditation. will use the traditional method of reciting phrases. Just a little more context before we move into that. We're going to be working with someone that you feel close to and care about, but who's currently experiencing some kind of difficulty. Could be a friend or a family member or partner, just someone you know quite well who's having a hard time at the moment. And because this is a training, I really encourage you to choose someone who's not going through the most extreme anguish or crisis. So on a scale of 1 to 10, try to bring to mind someone who's a 5 or less, if 10 is the most extreme suffering. And then in the phrases I'll use the word pain, but this refers to any kind of pain, not just physical pain, so any kind of difficulty or challenge. And the phrases I'll use are, I'm aware of your pain, I care about your pain, may your pain release, and may you know peace. So you might just see if someone comes to mind when you hear that. And then we'll give it a try.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.